Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 508. In this episode, Scott talks with Stacy Kirk, CEO of QualityWorks, a Node.js-focused quality assurance company.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, we're talking with Stacy Kirk. She's the CEO of QualityWorks Consulting Group. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Scott. It's good to be here.
So you're into Node. We're here at a Node conference. I've actually met you at a Node conference, and you have got a website, nodeqa.io. You're focusing on QA, right? You're not a general purpose consulting group that's going to do like full service. Your priority is testing and quality assurance?
Yes. We focus on all areas of quality service, quality assurance. So, full testing from unit, integration, end to end, functional. And we focus specifically on quality assurance and not software development. And there is some overlap in DevOps and also in process around agile coaching, but everything has a focus on software quality.
So when you're thinking about software quality at that level of focus, are you brought into an organization and you're looking at their shipping process and you're saying, there's a gap there and this is a quality gap. You need staff augmentation and maybe you need a better CI server and you need a better deployment strategy and things like that?
Well, we keep it pretty informal. We have a lot of conversations. Most tech firms know where their deficit is. What they don't know is how do they solve it. So they know that there's quality issues. They know that things are taking a long time to get out. And so I talk with developers. I talk with product owners. I look at their specs. I look at their code. And I give advice on what it is I think can help with that solution. Many times it's just understanding QA at a level that a lot of people don't really understand.
And you've been doing software for almost 20 years now, right? You came out of Stanford, and how did you get started?
So I actually started QA while I was at Stanford. It was my first internship. I was very excited to get into QA because, or not into QA, but just to have a job where I didn't have to sell burgers or do something in the hot sun. So I started with a company called Remedy Corporation. They were at the time one of the leading help desk software. And I had absolutely no idea what QA was. I just knew that it was a technical job and they were going to pay me more money than I could have ever imagined, $15 an hour. And once I started, I realized that there was a big difference between QA and development, at least at the time. The QA department and dev department rarely spoke to each other. There were two types of QA. There were mostly QA analysts that wrote a lot of test cases, weren't particularly very technical, didn't really know how to do any programming. And then there was one person that was the automation QA guy that also worked in a silo and created automated tests. So that was my introduction, but I did love quality. I loved finding issues and finding ways to do things better. So I've made a career of it.
You know, I've worked in big organizations and found that there's definitely kind of a, for lack of a better word, a respect gap between the software folks and the QA folks. And that can build, I think, resentment between organizations and, you know, like the spark of resentment turns into the fires of rebellion. Have you found similar kind of things?
Oh, yes. Luckily, I feed on that. So that's the only reason I've survived. Every year I get asked this question from a developer. they go, "Stacy, wow, you're really good. You should become a developer." And I go, "Thank you. That's why I'm not going to be a developer, but thank you very much." And I had a boss once that told this joke and didn't even realize that it could have been a little offensive. And he goes, "Do you know what happens to software developers when they do a bad job, when they die? They are reincarnated as QA people." So it has been difficult for most QA people. I've done this for 20 years, and so I've worked with hundreds of QA individuals. And it's very difficult to make a career in QA. If you're really talented, you will get pulled away. And you have to have a certain attitude. You personally have to be able to find gratitude in what you do, because very rarely do people come by your desk and go, "Oh, you found that really big bug. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy about it." So usually whatever issues are found by QA, it's kind of bad news. But the people that I've worked with that are really, some of the most talented QA people, I think, in the industry, they really do have a passion for quality and a passion for not just finding bugs, but having a product that goes out the door that everyone can be proud of.
I came up in the kind of late 90s timeframe, and somewhere around 99, 2000, we started talking about unit testing. And I'm not trying to read into it too much, but I'm starting to wonder if unit testing as a concept was a thing that developers came up with in order to like take testing away from the testers, but then also teach testers that didn't know how to code and then bring them over to our side. But it's unit testing lives in such a weird space, you know, don't you think, between regular, you know, between QA button clickers and devs?
Well, unit testing, is something that should be done by the developer. So around early 2000s, the test-driven development movement began to start. And I think unit testing in itself is very valuable. It allows developers to begin to think outside of just creating and think of what could happen. So it's a great way for them to see the bigger picture. The challenge is that, especially now that we're in Node, and there's and it's great because the Node community has spent a lot more time around testing. There is a folder with that says test. So for people like me that are really geeky about software quality, I'm just happy and pleased that in the Node community there is a location, there is a space for testing. The challenge is right now development thinks, if I can get to 100% code coverage, we don't have any bugs. And that's still not the case. Because this is one of the things that, has been, very valuable in terms of the issues that I've found over the years, is most of the severe bugs are not, code bugs. They're misunderstandings. And so you can't really, test for that in terms of what you write in your unit tests. And so what our company does is really educate our developers on, okay, great, you've gotten to the place where you can write good unit tests and you can use tools like Istanbul to evaluate your code coverage. But what's next? Why is it that you still have bugs? And we try to educate them on what other testing that they can do. And that's the reason that we, created NodeQA.io, so that there's a place where people can go, "Well, I just know unit testing. I don't know what else I need to do. I don't know what other things I need to do," so that as soon as I finish my test, finish my software code, I know that the tests are going to run and we'll have a good sense of the quality of the product.
So there's a lot there. I want to take apart some of what you said, because this is a lot of really good information. So first, the idea of code coverage, a particular number being a goal, like 100% or 100% of a particular module. It gets me thinking about the Cartesian product of all the different things that can go through. Like, you need to hit every single line of code, but really what you need to do is hit every single line of the code that is hit the most, don't you? You have to hit the hot path, as they say. Like, if you do 100% code coverage, you might be trying to get code coverage on sections of the code that are rarely, if ever, run, but not really what the what is needed by the business. Like you need to have multiple layers of code coverage and multiple kinds of tests around the hot path, don't you think?
So here's the extra layer of complexity. Right now, the calculation of code coverage is done at the unit test level, which means that it is generic across all functions that are being tested. There is no way to say these are the areas where our users are going to use the product the most. And in that area, we've got 100% coverage. And so that's the challenge that our company plans to address is, okay, we can have 100% code coverage of our unit tests, of our methods and functionality, but how do we really know if we have a high quality product? And quality, as we calculate it in our tools that we've created, is not only the code and the features, but also the priority of those. And priority is based on the usage from the user and the business.
So that gets me thinking, you are also a Scrum Master, right? And you're an Agile coach. And there's a lot of time spent when doing Agile coaching and when doing estimation to play things like, was it called estimation poker? Planning poker, when you take user stories and you weight them, that weight is valuable. It's important because you use it to schedule, but then that weight is basically thrown away. And why not take that forward into your unit test as a piece of metadata that then could be applied to your code coverage and then tell you if the important stuff got done?
Yes. The estimations are usually based on complexity. Mm-hmm. So, complexity and prioritization from business are a little bit different. So, the great thing about Agile and Scrum, and I'm a big champion for those as well, is that in those planning meetings, product owners share with the development team and the QA team exactly what's a priority to them. Those are the acceptance criteria. And so, the acceptance criteria could be five features that they want to make sure are there. But when development codes, they could have 100 methods or 100 functions that they create. So the value with having user stories is that you get an opportunity to see what is the most important thing to the product, and that's the acceptance criteria. And so as the QA function, which could be done by development or QA, really utilize that acceptance criteria as the priority for their end-to-end tests.
That makes a lot more sense than what I was saying. I appreciate that. No, that's a good correction, because there's the complexity of the story. There's the importance to the story at the business level, which is also a realization of a reminder, rather, that why is it we're writing software, right? We are writing this to support a business, to support a particular user story that is crucial to the business. And I think, like you said, when you break up a user story into 50 functions or some number of functions, a lot of that business prioritization is lost. There's an opportunity for QA, though, to resurface that to the developers.
Yeah, going back to my example of how QA was when I first started 20 years ago, there was no visibility for quality assurance into what was a priority. Business created requirements. You got a requirements doc, and at that company and that product size, the requirements doc was hundreds of pages. And development went off and they wrote their code. QA went off and wrote thousands of test cases. And each test case was one page each. It was literally larger than a Bible. And there was no clear idea of what is a quality product? And in order to understand that, you have to have those conversations. And so being, I love Agile QA. That's kind of like my tittle handle, because I love Agile QA, because it gives, the QA function, QA person, resource, or even a developer, a better understanding of what the business is looking for and what they consider quality.
Before, at the very beginning, when I talked about unit testing, you said that you felt that writing the unit test was a developer function. Do you think QA resources should be writing unit tests as well? Because I think it's Brian Lyles who always says, always be testing. Like, you should have double the code in your unit test than you should in your actual app. And that would imply that the more people writing unit tests, the better.
Well, there's so many different types of tests that need to be written. The great thing about having, for example, a Scrum team is there are people that are strong at being a software developer. There's people that are strong at being QA. There's people that are strong in UX. And traditionally, they would be a part of, that would be their title, and that's exactly what they do. But if we get to the core of a high-quality, high-functioning Scrum team, people can wear multiple hats. And so even though a QA person, I don't believe, would be necessarily the best person to write unit tests, the goal is getting a quality product out. So whoever has that experience, whoever has that skill, can come in and deliver those type of tests. But we've got to go beyond unit testing, and that's one of the things that we promote, is once we have our unit tests, nothing, it's almost like it's in a silo. You're testing very specific pieces of code and pieces of functionality. But we all know that code works within these larger systems, and there's integration level testing that needs to be done. Most code works with databases, so there's database testing that needs to be done. And of course, there's the front end. And so there's various areas where a QA person, and this is some of the areas that my company handles in terms of services, there's a lot of areas of testing that we don't think about. Unit testing is kind of the bottom of the pyramid. There's a testing pyramid, and at the bottom, ideally, you have your unit tests, and that's the majority of the testing that should be done. But after that, you have integration tests, UI tests, and exploratory tests. And so those are the ones that development doesn't have as much experience with generally, but needs to be done, and actually finds a lot of the bugs that have to do with integration of environments, integration with different devices, different third parties. And we give that advice on how we can do it in an automated way. How can we integrate that into CI systems so that when a developer checks in his code, we can have results in minutes, as opposed to how it was at Remedy 20 years ago, which would be days, possibly weeks, to get those results.
I love this this QA pyramid. Let's do that. Let's walk our way up the pyramid. So we've talked a little bit about unit testing and the importance of it, but I like that it is the base of the pyramid. It does support everything. You can't build everything else without a strong base. When you start moving from integration testing up into UI testing, do you think that Node is kind of uniquely placed in the sense that it's all JavaScript, all your app is JavaScript, all your unit tests are JavaScript, and now you can go and write, you know, Selenium tests or UI automation tests in JavaScript as well, which inevitably tests JavaScript that you wrote on the client side?
Yes, Node is awesome. In terms of being able to really find efficiencies and innovation in QA, I love Node because it does have modules that allow you to do testing at every level. So there's a lot of information out there about integration, contract testing, services testing. All of that is part of that integration layer. And then there's a lot of players. Nightwatch is one of our favorites. And the Mocha test framework. There's a lot of amazing modules that are out there for testing in itself. And, we're able to utilize those, in a great way now to speed up the way that we do testing. And, at the core of why I joined QA and I've stayed in QA for so many years is because I've been a developer, and I felt that there needed to be more efficiencies in the way we do quality assurance. I love quality, and I'd love to see quality done faster and integrated quicker and faster into the system. And Node is incredible because the community is so strong and is continuing to grow at such a pace that we have an opportunity where we can have a full integrated system of tests throughout that pyramid.
Is there a specific selection or a prescription that you give when you're saying, like, when you come into a company, like you've worked at all sorts of, you know, big companies, you know, from Symantec to FedEx and, you know, big companies, and they say, you know, hey, Stacy, we're using Node, but we just don't have an expertise. We need to know which UI integration library to use, which testing frameworks. Do you say, here's the integrated suite, and these are the open source projects that we feel worked best together? Or is it more of a collaboration?
Well, it definitely has to be a collaboration. One of the things that that I do that you rarely hear about is I analyze the people that are part of the project. You can have a group or a team, a scrum team, for example, at a large company that's very new to Agile, and they're resistant to change. They're resistant to new technologies. And so if that's the case, we still want that team to be successful, but they may not be ready for cutting edge technology. And also we have QA teams where they don't have the technical expertise. They would like to learn it, but they need the time to ramp up. And so we definitely customize for the environment that we're in. If we go to a company where there's QA people that have years of JavaScript experience that are very interested and very excited about new technologies, we give them a list of modules, a list of frameworks that we think would really allow them to get from 0 to 100 very quickly in terms of getting a continuous integration and maybe even a continuous delivery system together. So it has to be customized, and I think you have to look at the people that are a part of the team and where they are and meet them where they are in terms of the technologies we propose.
So you want to get them from 0 to 100, but one of the things that I've struggled with in the past when I started introducing, you know, a more formalized testing environment into big companies, particularly big companies, and the best word I have for it is lack of organizational maturity, right? I mean, you could show up and you could say, we're here, it's 2015, we've reached the promised land, let's talk about continuous deployment. And they're going to like, unit tests? Wait, slow down. You know, you have to kind of carry them for some of the bigger companies, don't you think?
Yes. There has to be a champion. I've been in a few, just to give you a few examples from my past. I remember my first day at one of the companies that I worked at, and I was so excited to be there. And I went to the head of development and I said, I'm very excited. Show me where your code is. Show me where I can find the database schemas. I want to learn as much as I can. And I remember him looking at me and going, I will never let you look at our code. I don't understand why you need that. And I remember going to another organization where I said, I'd like to understand the logic, your design, of how you decided to build this code. And they go, you're QA. You don't need to understand that. If you're a good QA person, you'll figure it out just like the user would. So I remember thinking, I think I just went back in time. So there's definitely different experiences in terms of how much information people want to share and where they want to go. I don't know. Let me make sure I answered your question.
Well, I like where you went at the beginning, where you're talking about there needs to be a champion. Because when you said that, in my mind, I put in parentheses, an internal champion, right? Because you're the consultant who's being brought in. You're not the champion, are you?
Yes. Without a champion, we'll fail as a consultant agency. And I've gone into companies where there wasn't a champion, and it doesn't matter how great the technologies and solutions that we provide, we're not going to be successful. And the person that is a champion has to have a voice in that organization. Sometimes they'll pick hey, this one developer will work with you. But if that developer does not have impact, we'll fail. Quality definitely has to have a champion internal that'll say, because it gets tough sometimes. It's QA. It gets tough. Hey, you've got to get to 100% code coverage, 90% code coverage. It's sometimes can be very tedious. And if there's no one there that's going to champion for the why and how this is going to make their end product better, it will fail. I always say that even though I'm the QA person on this project, QA is all of our responsibility. And if you're not bought in, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many tests that I execute, how great my plan and my strategy is. If the development team is not bought into quality as well, we all gonna fail.
I feel like quality in software is kind of like eating right. And I say this as a diabetic. I was explaining my diabetes to someone at lunch today, and they wanted to know how I was doing. And I said, well, I'll let you know in 20 years, right? Whether or not I die. And then that sounds a little bit morbid, but think about it for a second, right? How's your blood sugar? I'll let you know in 20 years. It's the same thing with Q&A, right? How do you feel about the tests, right? Well, we have some metrics, we have some code quality, we have some coverage numbers, but ultimately we're going to ship it and it's going to either do well or not. And that is one of the challenges about being a human is, hey, eat right and you'll live a long life. And, you know, if you ask us now, are you eating well? And like, well, I don't know. I think I am. I'll let you know when I'm 70 and I'll let you know how it went. That deferred gratification is, I think, one of the reasons why QA doesn't get the respect that it deserves, because you don't necessarily get that immediate, like, quality is improved, you know, metric. Is there a way to get those metrics in front of me sooner than in the future when I ship?
Well, there are ways to have good metrics, and we make sure that all of our projects have ongoing metrics of quality so that our clients, our executives, the team can get an idea and get a good pulse on where the product is. But you bring up a point. Another project that I was working on, the CEO of the company said, I want to release in September. And the development team knew, everyone knew, that was not possible. It was probably going to be more like January of the next year. But the CEO said, if you don't hit September, everyone's gone. And so what happened is that development coded the biggest hack of their life. And it didn't matter that it passed. I told the CEO, listen, when you put people in a situation where they have to code without giving them an opportunity to build in that quality, it's very similar to what you're saying about your health. The health of the product, you can always cover up a lot of things, but if you don't take the time, and that's what it's so great about some of the agile best practices about, not overworking people and having realistic times and for people to work and let them choose the work that they're going to do and commit to for every sprint, is that there is no metric to say how poorly a product was hacked together to get to a release. But you know, and as I told them, I said, you know, our quality metric on this is 90%. 90% means that 1 out of 10 times that a user experiences this product, they're going to find a bug. And they go, that sounds good enough. until it release. And they realize that 1 out of 10 features, 1 out of 10 actions done in this system are failing. It's not good enough. And and months after that was released, they were doing more and more hot fixes until January. So they ended up going maybe actually to March by that time, because there is, I believe developers, when they tell me, listen, this is going to take 2 months. If they say I can't do it quicker, I tell executives, please trust them. They know, and please give them a little bit more time just so that they have the opportunity to write their unit tests and to really test their code properly.
That is really powerful, the idea that someone could say 90% quality and they're going to immediately think about all the other things in life where 90% is an acceptable number. Like, oh, 90%, that's an A. Excellent. But if I told you your website would be up 90% of the time, you would be like, that's completely unacceptable. You know, maybe we need new metrics to express to someone, like, this is the 90% in this case is a D. It sounds like in that scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. When we're talking about quality and usage and functionality, it's just like uptime of a site. You want 99.9%, especially if you're dealing with something in the healthcare or financial industry. You don't want to have any more than a 1% a gap in terms of where your quality is. But when people are pushed, and this is why, even though my company provides metrics that share and they've been very accurate once they go to production, if you're at 90%, it does appear that you're getting 90%. When some products are pushed, people go, you know what? We're just going to go with it and see what happens.
Yeah, I worked in online banking for a number of years. And one time we had deployed something that had to do with checks and check imaging. And then the first of the month came in and then the world showed up to see their checks and look at their, you know, their deposited checks. And, someone wanted to know how many transactions were failing every second. And, it was 1%. And we all thought that was great. And then I said, well, how many people are on the site right now? And it was some number of hundreds of thousands, which means that like 7,000 people a second are having crappy experiences. You know, like 1% failure at Facebook scale or at Twitter failure is pretty horrible. So your website is nodeqa.io, and you're building up a resource of QA and a community for people in the node space to explore. When folks check that out, what are they going to expect to see?
Well, they're going to find information about different areas of testing, from unit testing to code coverage, how to utilize mock modules to simulate traffic, to simulate database interactions, how to do test reporting. We have a product that we plan to beta next quarter that takes all of the tests from every different level and merges them up into one comprehensive test report that can be viewed by the team. And there's information about comparing those modules, which I've always found to be very valuable. There's a lot of sites that say, oh, this is a great tool, this is a great tool, this is a great tool. We try to make it easy because we know everyone's busy, and we create these comparison charts where you can just see, yes, it has this feature, no, it doesn't have that, and you can make your decision on what you think is the best. And we also give our suggestions on what we think are some of the leaders right now in that space.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Stacey Kirk, CEO of QualityWorks Consulting Group. People can check her out at nodeqa.io. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.